Join us now, the longest running CEO of the major American. I guess that's good, but it also sounds, let's say, wise, I think. And you've been through a lot. Jamie Dimon, head of J.P. Morgan Chase, made some news last week, didn't you, my friend? That was interesting. Can you expound on that? What, if the government shutdown continues, we actually could bring on a more than just a slowdown. We could bring on zero, perhaps.
First of all, welcome. Happy to be here. I was actually repeating somebody else.
I know.
As you mentioned.
Ian Shepherd
said that if it lasted the whole quarter, it could make growth zero. Now, I don't actually know. We all think it's kind of a hockey stick that actually exponentially gets worse as people stop spending money and restaurants don't get money and they don't spend and vendors. And we just don't know. We've tried to figure it out, but it's not a plus. It's just not a plus out there.
The recent developments, nobody knows, but we're right in the middle of it now. I just wonder if you think that the more we hear about Coast Guard people not putting food on the table, I mean, it's incumbent upon someone to move off the dime or the snide or whatever.
Well, I heard David Rubenstein on your show saying that,
right.
And he probably spoke to someone who may know.
And McConnell has two competing plans.
The Democrats and Republicans should sit down and finish this issue immediately and compromise to do it. That's what they should do.
All right.
Jamie, you talk about leadership styles all the time. What's it going to take? I mean, these are our supposed leaders in Washington, both sides of the aisle. The idea that they've let this go on for 33 days?
Yeah. I don't know. You know, I thought the president actually moved a little bit. Well, he spoke about $5.7 billion. Mm-hmm. Part of that was, I think, like $1.5 billion was things that Democrats wanted. Everyone wants the DACA to stay. You know, you can argue 3 years permanently, but, you know, to me, there's the makings of a deal, and they should make a deal because it's going to get worse for the American public. And they shouldn't allow it. And it's damaging confidence a little bit. You see, consumer business confidence skyrocketing. Now it's coming down a little bit because of that, because of trade, all the noise in around the world about populism. And so, you know, if policymakers want the economy to grow, they better keep driving the ball.
Is it having on the bank? And the reason I ask is we've had a lot of conversations, including with Adita Freeman and other. We're going to see Derek Khosrowshahi, who's supposed to maybe pursue an IPO in 2019. Right. Everybody's pens, as far as I understand, are down right now, which means that bankers, lawyers, accountants, anybody who would be doing that kind of business is at least temporarily not doing it.
Yeah. So there's another example. So IPOs can't get done. Anything that's got to get signed off by the SEC basically can't get done. So the backlog will continue to grow, people waiting, people not getting comments on their 10-K, all these things, but they're just not good. This is not the way to run a railroad. And, you know, somehow our government should figure out a way simply never to do it again.
Are we at neutral? Fed funds? Are we at neutral?
I don't know. Can I just give you a quick assessment? Because I think, you know, he's all the noise out there. The U.S. economy is kind of like a ship that's going, it's growing, X the shutdown, 2 to 2.5%, and that's going to keep on going for a while. Then you have all this other noise. Okay, geopolitical noise, Brexit noise, what's the Fed fund, what's the Fed going to do, I'll talk about that in a second, shutdown, trade, and those kind of, they're kind of like boiling the waters in front of that ship. So eventually that may very well cause a slowdown or a recession. And I don't know if it's 2020 or 2021, but the range of possibilities is broader and the range of bad outcomes is increasing.
Yeah, but if something bad really good happens, you get a tailwind? If we did something?
Yes. Yeah.
So then it's not 2 to 2.5, then we're back to maybe 3.
It's possible. And I think the Fed will look at what's going on. I mean, my guess is they'll probably pause now. But if they raise rates again in 6 months or so because we're growing at 2.5%, that's still a good thing.
Let me ask you.
I always tell the what is much more important. The why is much more important than the why.
But that's if the Fed reads the economy right. That's the big question. That's where people.
My guess is with all the stuff that's going on today, they're going to wait a little bit.
But Jamie,
if you have growth of 2% in the first quarter, you know, adjusted for the shutdown, then you know maybe 2.5% in the second quarter. That is a good thing. You know, and even, you know, the IMF report, it was reported very negative. They reduced their global growth forecast from 3.7 to 3.5. Most of the negative coming out of Europe.
But, Jamie, in terms of GDP U.S., you're one of the few CEOs who actually was with the president, President Trump, that is, on the idea that we could get to 3% or 4% and that you could unleash.
I don't know. One of the few CEOs that.
There were, I would say, most economists and many CEOs would have told you
if it's all
whatever.
We can debate where you think everybody was.
That's a false assertion.
At that time, but the question is,
a lot of people like the tax reform and the deregulation.
Yeah.
I'm not dissuading you of that view.
Yeah, maybe economists, but CEO. Anyway.
But the question is, now that we're back to two and a half percent, how do you think about that view
absolutely.
A year ago?
If you make a list, I mean, sometimes we look at ourselves, like what can we do better as a nation? You know, not just yelling and screaming about other people. and not being afraid about geopolitics or that. But what can we do? We don't get infrastructure done right. The tax reform is critical to have a cumulative buildup of capital in the United States and reinvest it here. We don't get our kids apprenticeships to get them jobs. Our health care system costs too much. It's great health care system. Best in the world. 18.5% of GDP. Okay, we don't give our felons jobs. If we looked at our own issues and fixed them, we'd be growing at 3%. And, you know, to me, and reform was part of that. Regulatory reform, tax reform, small business formation was lower than it's ever been in a major American recovery, mostly because of regulations and lack of access to capital. And so to me, I always look at something, what can you do better yourself? Like, analyze it. But the thing that we have to do is facts, analysis, detail, not just slogans. And then policy that's well done and explained to the American public, as opposed to slogans and policy that's implemented that doesn't work. I mean, you made a list of the policies that we've done in America for the last 50 years that were complete and utter failures, and they're still there. I mean, we should acknowledge it and fix it. And, you know, you have a...
What's at the top of the list?
Well, I would put on the next ground is immigration reform is hurting this country dramatically, including merit-based, more merit-based. Infrastructure. I've mentioned you guys before, 8 years to put a man on the moon, 12 years to get the permits to build a bridge. Education, and think of education where kids graduate high school, vocational school, with apprenticeships and training that gets them a very good job. Okay, and healthcare, I think, is a little more complicated, but we need to work on that. Regulatory reform still needs to be done. We have in place regulations that are being followed, you know, to basically the bureaucracy. You know, the American public really is it's bureaucracy. It's not, and it's some form of sinecure. And sometimes they're regulated by are state and local. They're not federal. So if you travel with me one day and visit a bunch of small businesses and ask them what they have to go through to open a small business, how many licenses they have to get, how many times they get audited by the city, the state, or the federal government, you know, for a store with, you know, 10 people working in it. So it's us. We did this to ourselves.
Jamie, is there anything to the notion that, you know, we're trying to come out of the extraordinary measures after the financial crisis? We make it back to 2 and change, and things start slowing. Is there anything to the notion that we've built up so much debt that you know, the slightest increase in rates causes the debt service to go up to where it's unsustainable, and you start choking off at much lower levels, choking off.
No, but this is even Seth Klarman thinks that we're going to get to that.
Yeah.
That
so Seth made a list of a lot of the things and the geopolitical stuff, this kind of mounting series of issues. The fiscal issue is a real issue, and it's really got to be dealt with. It's not an immediate issue. So our debt to GDP is like 80% on its way to 100, on its way to 120. We can afford all that, but it becomes a hockey stick in about 15 years. And it's all related to entitlements. So smart people would say, my God, we've got an issue. Let's get together and figure out how to give medical to our people and do it much more efficiently than the system we have in place. But it's not the reason you're going to have a recession tomorrow.
But is the reason that we're now at what may be neutral, what seems like a historically very low interest rate level, is that because inflation is going to be permanently lower because of innovation? Or is it because we can't afford to go up any higher because it just gets prohibitively expensive?
I don't think it's really either of those.
Both?
I think it's a little bit of both of those. And our own, like I said, all these other things that affected growth. Innovation in America is unbelievable. It's just, look at the things I said that are hurting productivity. Infrastructure hurts productivity. Immigration hurts productivity. Excessive health care costs hurts productivity. Not having kids have jobs hurts productivity. Like, take kids. We've got half the kids in inner city high schools don't graduate. And we have it's a crisis. And I don't see people saying we have a national emergency. And then all the people involved should get together and say, let's do something about it. And I don't care whether you're Democrat or Republican, a teacher, a union member, or a parent. It is a national emergency. And we're relegating generations of kids to poverty.
Barely a Democrat? What are you now? Yeah,
I don't relate. I don't relate really well to either.
You've been record on the right. You said a Democrat at one point. Yeah. Have you revised that? Or
no, my heart is Democratic, but my brain is kind of Republican.
Hear that, Andrew?
I heard it. I say country over party.
That's your saying. I don't know how that applies to you at all.
I'm going to stick with that for now.
All right.
China, how does that play in this whole conversation? And where do you think nets out?
It is the most important relationship geopolitically in the world for the next 100 years. The administration has raised very serious trade issues, and they are right. Both sides want to resolve it. And you see, every time it looks like we might resolve it, things get better. Every time it looks like we won't resolve it, things get worse. If you have tariffs,
if
you have tariffs getting in place on March 1st, I think that would be bad for the global economy.
But when you say resolve it, there's the possibility of resolving this micro issue. But if you talk to people like Ray Dalio or others, they talk about the idea that we've gone from cooperation to competition to maybe something even worse, and that's a much longer term.
I don't battle. I don't agree with that. I mean, China has serious issues. Like, the American public doesn't recognize their neighbors are North Korea, South Korea, Japan, Vietnam, Indonesia, Pakistan, Afghanistan, India, and Russia. They don't have a food war and energy. They don't have our innovation. They don't have our institutions. I'm not insulting them. I'm simply saying don't blow it out of proportion. But I think what you need to do is get this strategic relationship mostly around trade right and fair. And not just for us, but for the Europeans, for the Japanese. And I think both parties want to do that. And that would be better for the world growth. But again, I don't want to overemphasize it. A lot of America's problems are our own doing. Okay, I don't think you should say, look at the Chinese menace over there and think that's why we have some of our problems. It's not.
Although, Jamie,
maybe a narrow amount.
You're talking about getting an agreement and reaching something before March when the tariffs are going to expand or anything goes along that way. Then you talk about the details where you say you really need to get into intellectual property and all kinds of other issues that are longer term. What's more important, to have something done by the beginning of March or have something that addresses all those other topics?
Okay, I'm going to tell you what I think is going to happen.
Yeah.
I think they'll get enough done, kind of agreements in principle, before the end of March to extend the deadline. I think it's very hard to get something done by March because of the complexity. But if you read the papers and read between the lines, they will allow more American foreign companies to buy control of their companies there. That solves two problems: unfair investment and some of the forced intellectual property transfer, because that's what people meant. I can do business there, but I own 49%, I got to put my technology in. Have a form, you know, IP's being stolen, a very quick form to stop that. The Chinese have been talking about reducing their tariffs unilaterally. And then this whole thing about China 2025, that you got to split into little component pieces. Okay, it shouldn't be. They have the right to have industrial policy to grow their country and benefit their people, just like we should have better industrial policy. But what they don't have the right to do is to use state-owned enterprises, theft, subsidies, forced transfers, all these things to dominate industries against other countries around the world. So, look, I think the Chinese, I think they're quite bright. I think they see that, you know, if you walk around here, you know, the Japanese, the Europeans, the Mexicans, they all feel that this needs to be fixed. And it's not against Japan, China. It's just, let's clean up the global trading system.
So do you think that the Davos zeitgeist from last year, as positive as it was it really as positive as we thought back then? And this year, you know, as tempered as everyone's enthusiasm is it really as tempered? Are we that different?
The great contraindicator.
I mean, are we that?
You guys know what I think of the common knowledge, okay? I would always bet against it.
But was it?
If I go and bet for or against,
probably
I'm betting against.
About the same last year as it is this year. But we think it's like this.
Markets, right? It's sentiment, the narrative, the echo chambers, you know, and that does affect. And then it obviously affects markets, and maybe
groupthink.
It's groupthink. And so 3.5% global growth, the United States is doing fine. Trade may get resolved, and all those things may reverse. I mean, we're going to have a recession one day. We're adults. We should all understand that. And we don't know exactly what's going to cause the next one or exactly the timetable is, but the financial system's in far better shape in the United States. I think there are some issues around the world.
But as a risk manager, and you're one of the best, obviously, we go back to the financial crisis, obviously. Is there anything that you see icebergs? You feel like you're in a Titanic?
I'd say lots of little things. Like, you know, Brexit, if that goes south, that's not good. If trade goes south, that's not good. If the shutdown goes on for longer, that's not good. They have real direct effects in the economy and then indirect confidence. So you have seen, you know, confidence come down a little bit. So, you know, if I was a policymaker, I'd want to get these things resolved. Right. Have good policy, but maximize.
Those are the risks to the downside. What's the upside surprise?
Well, the China gets done.
You think that's almost built in, though? I mean, I think the groupthink is there's an expectation come March 1st, something will happen.
I think that's probably true, but again, I always look at the range of possibilities. I hate guessing about one because you don't really know. So, my guess is the data out of the United States, ex the shutdown, would be rather good coming forward. You know, that could be. Everyone's going to take a deep breath after that. And say, "Well, coming back."
We're here next year, going, "God, what's going to happen with this China problem?" And it's not going to be totally fixed because this is a multi-year thing. But I still would bet next year that we're not every other third word is China or government shutdown next year, a year from now, right?
I would hope so.
We'll be on to something else.
Jamie, can I ask you really quickly? You've brought up health care costs several times. Obviously, you're working with Amazon and Berkshire Hathaway to try and come to some result with that. It sounds like you're pretty hands-on with some of these things. How soon might we see some sort of announcement about what you've come
up with? We're just hiring a great team and looking at how we should attack this problem. It's a long-term view. We don't expect any announcement anytime soon. And, you know, we will share if we come up with anything good, but we're going to start small, test a bunch of different things. But what we really need now is a great team. And, you know, I mentioned the healthcare, we have the best in the world, like doctors, hospitals, pharma, you name it. But we also have some of the worst outcomes. Obesity, we've got wellness programs that could work better. The opioid problem, 40 million uninsured. So, you know, to me, you look at the whole issue, and then what should we do about it? And for the American public, the rest of the world, developing world spends 9% in medical. Now, remember, you get better medical here, but 9% is a lot less. And if you look at it as a competitive issue over the future, that is a huge impediment for American business over the next 50 years.
You want to do it or you want me to do it?
Which one?
Did you take any satisfaction when Bitcoin dropped 80% or no?
Nope.
You didn't take
it. Listen, you guys, I've told you before, you know, when AOL went up and came down, you know, it was by
you guys.
You all put
you
it
guys.
On.
It don't was, look, you, guys. You don't actually, look at me.
You actually put on CNBC every day for a year. Bitcoin.
I just said
you should stop doing
that. Not on our show.
No.
You should stop doing it.
Well, what? Do you feel the same way? You weren't Charlie Munger. You didn't mungerize it.
We didn't have the button on the bottom of our, the bug on the bottom.
Yeah, but we did that interview, Delivering Alpha, right? And and that was the day he said it was a fraud. And
but you didn't use an expletive. Yeah. I like expletive.
I didn't want to be the spokesperson against it. But we're using blockchain. That's completely different. It's a technology. But even that, we've been talking about now for year after year after year for 7 years, and no one's really effectively done something.
About pot. So I mean, I think Bitcoin's better than marijuana, isn't it, Jamie?
It is, but we're not banking pot either.
We'll all hang out at the blockchain. There's a blockchain lounge here this year.
Yeah.
Up on the prime.
What are we going to be drinking?
Blockchain is probably a real technology with data. It's really just a database that we can all access and we all trust it. And it's kept up to date. And it may be usable for certain things and not for others. It does cost money to maintain, to process a transaction. So it's like for equity trades, if it costs 2 cents to process a black trade and an equity trade costs you a penny, you aren't going to use it for that.
Here, the new buzzword is protocol, which is the internet of blockchain, which is an internet.
Well, that's the other thing. For a blockchain use case, you have to write the code. We have to agree on protocols. It's a lot of work to do something, but we're doing a bunch of stuff now that's interesting. And once you start, you can expand it. Yeah.
All right. It's always a highlight, Jamie. And we make these little things called chyrons, and we have a really easy one. My heart's a Democrat, my brain says Republican, and I'm gonna bring that up for you a lot
for the rest of your life.
Thank you, Jamie Dimon.